All levels nominal.
So Night Bitch is actually a novel. It's a 2021 novel by American writer Rachel Yoder.
Wait.
And the book is a magical realism style story of a stay-at-home mom who sometimes transforms into a dog. So this isn't a completely original IP.
Did this go viral on TikTok?
No. I don't know.
I haven't seen it on TikTok. Okay, yeah. Everything. Look, I don't want to cast any kind of aspersions about this novel. It's possibly quite good, but everything that you just described there is every single trend in what has been popular in book marketing for the last four years.
Well, it came out in 2021, so the novel received positive reviews, praised the book as a stunning modern feminist fable that shouldn't be missed. All right. There's a picture of a woman holding some nice meat.
That is nice meat. It's well detailed.
That's good meat. I'm going to be honest.
In my head now, I'm like, it's just like American Psycho meets Gone Girl meets...
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to be honest. And I'm going to say the fact that this existed beforehand makes me want to see it less.
No.
Because I'm like, oh. Like, it's not just completely out of left field.
Yeah, but Amy Adams.
That is the number one reason I would want to go. I'm a big Amy Adams fan.
I think we wait for the reviews and we see how weird it is.
That's true. I mean, I even saw Arrival.
You did see Arrival.
Did I see that with you?
Did we see Arrival together?
I don't remember.
Possibly.
It was in Chicago. Wasn't it? When did that come out?
I just finished watching Sharp Objects, which Amy Adams is also in and is very good.
That's awesome.
She's been doing a lot of stuff like this lately.
2016. It was not in Chicago. You were in Chicago.
I was in Chicago then.
Okay. So we couldn't have seen it together. I guess I saw it with someone else.
you can't remember.
This has been an episode of Storm Blank Check.
scintillating commentary you're offering here.
Let's get going. We dive into Magic the Gathering and how one might sling spells in one of its many, many products. Universes Beyond Fallout.
Buzz, storm of buzz, and we're going to tell you about how we saved the world.
Hello, one, and hello, all. I am your host of Light, Jerome Barbatsis, and I'm joined by my fellow co-host of Light, Alexander Hambrock. Say hello, Alexander.
Counterspell.
No, shit.
You can't greet me for the rest of the episode.
Oh, it's one of those. Okay, sure. I will not do that. Well, welcome to this singularly special episode of Storm Buds. We are going to be talking about, as I said in the intro, Magic the Gathering Universes Beyond Fallout as part of our Fallout April month. This is just a big whole cultural thing of Fallout going on with the Amazon show. And we thought it would be fun to visit the franchise and talk about this relatively new product.
We're half nakedly piggybacking on this for traffic, but half also you wanted to do Fallout for like 6 months.
Yeah. So. Well, I also think Magic the Gathering is an interesting topic. It will be an interesting topic to talk about, as that is how our friendship started.
Yes.
We met at a Magic night of a mutual friend back in Minnesota when we lived there, and he needed a ride to those places, and boy, those car rides, they were proto episodes of Storm Buds if you think about it. So that is why we're together. This is a game that has a special place in both of our hearts, even if we have not really engaged with it in the past couple of years, and we'll talk about how that has come to be. A quick overview of the episode. I want to provide some context for Magic the Gathering in general and some reassurance that we will not be going into rules of Magic the Gathering.
Not too much. We might refer to things like drawing a card or taking damage.
We are going to try to describe the flavor of it, because we know that this is not a primarily Magic the Gathering podcast, and Magic the Gathering is a highly, highly esoteric form of entertainment. But one of the things that they're doing is they're trying to reach out to people who are interested in other franchises with their Universes Beyond product, including Fallout. But I think there is quite a winding road to get to walk in order for people to fully understand how this exists and why this exists.
That is the most generous possible description I could imagine for why this exists.
Right. So we are going to, I want to dive into that, and then we'll talk about some of the product itself, some of the cards we really, really liked, maybe don't like or have other feelings on. And I also want to provide a Stormbud's patented guide of sorts to really getting into Magic the Gathering.
Oh boy. Okay.
I think that I'm not giving up on that B segment yet, but we are going to not talk about the rules. We're just going to talk about how you really, really get into it.
Are we covering basic game history?
Yes, okay, I'm going to cover. I'm going to talk about. I have kind of an essay here that I want to dive into Magic the Gathering, sort of really rudimentary history and how its sort of reception and products sort of blossomed over the past 30 years. And you can please feel free to interject with corrections or additional context or color commentary as you so desire.
I will say also, I actually ended up speaking with some folks in a Discord server I'm part of that is a very active Magic the Gathering community, and they also tend to think about the game on a bit of a higher level that includes understanding kind of like the corporate stuff going on, same way that we do. So I've actually also got a reasonable sense from them of kind of what the vibe is on the game contemporarily, like what's going on right now. So I might chime in some of that commentary too.
Yeah, absolutely. So high level current state of affairs is that Magic the Gathering is a trading card game. It is developed by Wizards of the Coast, a subsidiary of Hasbro Entertainment. Big company. It was originally designed by a man named Richard Garfield and released in 1993. And its original reception was overly positive. This is a resounding success because it's obviously still here today, but specifically it was just designed as a quick way to spend time with friends, right? A couple of reviews here. Scott Herring at Pyramid Magazine or Pyramid website, is early internet, he said in 1993, he said, Not only is Magic the best gaming bargain to come down the pike in memory, not only is it the most original idea in years, it's also a delightfully addictive game that you and your friends will find impossible to put down. Alan Emish, E-M-I-I-C-H, sorry if I butchered your name, in his review for Shadus Magazine, y'all, these early 90s magazine names, they're pretty wild, he said the following. At the heart of it, Magic the Gathering doesn't sound like there's a lot to it, but as the saying goes, it's all in the cards. The 302 cards intended for release in this Deckmaster series game has been carefully culled from a playtest selection too numerous to mention. Similarly, some cards were selected to be common while others are more rare, not only to add value to them for collectors, but also to balance the game. Parentheses, hey, too many demonic hordes can spoil the broth, you know? Close parentheses. And
the idea of the first Magic set being balanced is, in hindsight, extremely funny.
It's extremely funny and balanced by its, well, that was a, I think, lapse in judgment that everyone 30 years later can look back and say, wow, yeah, that didn't work out. But let's talk about why that is.
I was going to say, speaking of reception also, I'm looking at Board Game Geek right now, where Magic the Gathering has a community rating of 7.6, which
by their standards
is at least like an 8.8. So
yeah, that's not bad. Developed by Wizards of the Coast then over the past, you know, over 30 years, Magic would ultimately go on to have several printings in 1993 alone, as well as its first of many expansions called Arabian Nights. The property would learn and grow into its own high fantasy universe over time, so kind of eventually eschewing the real world influences for its own intellectual property. And it introduced things like legendary characters and loose storylines in which players could follow the growth and development of those legendary characters throughout the course of several sets. The sets would then start to revisit locations that players were familiar with. This is, if you're familiar with Dungeons and Dragons, obviously Wizards of the Coast, you might know something like Planescape, where there is just sort of this hub world, and then there's all these sort of other universes that you can go to. That's basically Magic the Gathering. It is in itself a contained multiverse story-wise, and there are planeswalkers that travel the set at this point, or but they're not necessarily, and they're not necessarily all the legendary creatures, but basically that is kind of what's happening at a very high level. You wanted to say something?
Yeah, because I want to speak briefly. Like, I think that the once they started really going in the kind of plane jumping direction, which really started kicking off in earnest around 2005, 2006 with the launch of the Mirrodin set.
Yeah.
Well, like, that kicked off what I thought was like one of the creatively strongest periods of the game. Yeah, I know there was like Invasion and stuff, but like, but they weren't doing the one world thing.
Yeah, let's kind of, yes and no. No, there were, I mean, Arabian Nights was on the plane of Rabaiyah, which is never being revisited again.
Sure.
They were already doing this sort of thing well before the later stuff, and I want to kind of stay there for a second because the sets would still start to revisit these locations that were players were familiar with, and as well as include cards that were previously used in other sets. This did not sit well with the people in the 90s who believed that the children's card game was tantamount to bullion, and they rose in protest and demanded financial security for their capital. Thus did the Wizards devise a mostly arbitrary list of cards that would neither be reprinted in name nor function in any official capacity for the rest of time. The spirit of this list has been, however, broken a couple times by the printing of a foil version, a premium version of Phyrexian Negator in Dual Decks Phyrexia, and the Coalition versus the Coalition, as well as Mox Diamond in the product From the Vault Relics. If that was a confusing sentence, boy, those are just two of many products. But basically, the spirit of the reserve list was broken in such that it never covered, the loophole existed. There was a loophole that existed, and it never covered saying like, oh, we can't say we can't reprint these things in premium. Mm-hmm.
Right, because you got the core sets, which are the stuff that people are playing with day to day, and you have this increasing ecosystem of supplementary products of like special decks,
yeah,
special sets, special boxes with a handful of cards in them that are supposed to be collector's items that get used to kind of start skirting this whole system.
Yes, and when asked if people were really incensed by the reprinting of Phyrexian Negator, which, by the way, not a very strong or powerful card these days, it's literally just hard to make because they can't print it anymore, on his personal blog, lead developer Mark Rosewater responded, "More than you know." When pointed out that after having used this method of printing it, that it was evident that it had absolutely and demonstrably no effect on the monetary value of the originals, Rosewater responded, "Logic isn't going to win this argument. Trust me, I tried." And I include those quotes in defense of the designers at Wizards of the Coast when it comes to this product and this game. This is largely, there is a certain undercurrent of investment and capitalism that is forever associated in the ecosystem of this game. Wizards of the Coast itself is not allowed to address the secondary market, which means that if they are not allowed to explicitly say that they are putting cards in sets because they are expensive to buy otherwise or hard to find, you're not allowed to talk about things like that, which is bogus. it's very clear that they are very very aware of how expensive certain cards are, and they are they use those as carrots on sticks in new products.
And I think a recurring tension we're going to kind of talk about here is between the design of the game as sort of like an interactive product and the design of the game pushing towards ways to increase monetization, create sort of like, you know, hype cycles, boom and bust type things, etc.
Yeah, and there's, over the course of the past 30 years of those cycles, Magic the Gathering has grown to become a multimedia franchise of its own, with video game releases like Chandelar, Battle Mage, and the effective PC ports of the game of Magic the Gathering Online and Magic Arena. As time went on, the list of expansions grew and grew, and so did the list of said supplemental products. Not only were there expansions to the core set that were legal in competitive formats and sanctioned formats, there were introductory Planeswalker decks, the aforementioned dual decks that had one of the forbidden reserve list cards, the From the Vault collector set, same deal, multiplayer focused pre-constructed decks, the most popular of which is called Commander, joke sets, and even format masters sets like Standard and Modern are different kinds of formats. Then they would have Masters. Well, Standard and Masters is just a new thing, but Modern and Legacy, and they are sets that were initially exclusively reprints of format staples that have been since introduced their own unique flair of overpowered and overpriced rare cards that ultimately get banned from the format they're meant for.
Right. Third theme we're going to keep hitting here. All of these products, which once meant were kind of inhabit distinct lanes, have all increasingly been bleeding and bleeding and bleeding together.
Yep. And in addition to their supplemental products, their main product diverged for a while into both set boosters and draft boosters. Before, you would just buy a booster of something like Magic the Gathering Theros, and it would have Theros cards in it, and it would have a rare, maybe a foil, and some uncommons and commons. And then for a bit, they were like, we know people like to just open boosters without drafting them, so why don't we make this sort of set booster thing with increased collectibles in it? And then there's draft boosters. One is meant for immediate play, where you can open packs and play with them, and the other for collection. But on top of that, there's also collector's boosters that had appeared at an extremely premium price, upwards of $20 to $30 now? I don't know, for these increased chances of premium versions of product. And on top of that, different types of premium products started appearing. Cards, apart from just being common, uncommon, mythic, rare, and rare, I mean, they added that mythic rarity, whatever. They could be foil, they could be regular extended art foil, a certain showcase frames, showcase extended art, etched foil, showcase extended art foil, special guest cards, quote, the list cards, surge foil, raised foil. the one and truly special form of FOMO, the secret lair drops. They also, and I didn't write this down, I forgot to mention it. You may have heard about Post Malone buying a copy of The One Ring in their Lord of the Rings crossover for $2 million. There was only one of those for that. There are other non-version premium printings of The One Ring, but...
It's all loot box shit, right? Yeah. It's all like, you know, like it's all chasing after that same idea of like, okay, what if instead of just a card that was like a 1 in 300 chance of getting it, what if there was a card that was a 1 in 10,000 chance of getting it? Wouldn't you buy a lot of boosters
to get the card? It is a children's card game that is supported by gambling and capitalist gain. At this point, though, all of these things aren't on the reserved list, so there's not a whole lot of stability in actually having opened product. A lot of the times people at this stage of the game, 30 years later, they're not necessarily investing in these reserve list cards. They're just investing in the sealed product and then selling that off later at a premium price because people keep chasing the highs of opening cards.
Although I will say, I'm going to defend, we have a lot of complaints about the direction the game is headed. I will defend it a bit. I still think that for as much as I personally dislike all of this, a lot of this is still less exploitative than like a lot of really bad gacha games and stuff like that. Like, there's a reason why you don't really see news stories that are like, I blew my kid's college fund on Magic the Gathering cards. Some of it's just like, as a physical card game and with the way the secondary market works and everything else like that, there are sort of like guardrails on just how out of control stuff can get that make it difficult to, you know, look up and next thing you know, you've blown $15,000 and you didn't even realize you were doing it.
Well, that's not necessarily... I appreciate the devil's advocacy here, but it's still bad.
It's still bad.
It's still very bad, and I don't know... I mean, if you compare it to a game with microtransactions, even a game with microtransactions like Teamfight Tactics... Teamfight Tactics comes out way on top. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, sure. Yes.
Like there are other games. That game is still not extortion. It's what's the word? It's still pretty expensive. Like it would be hundreds if not thousands of dollars to get all the collectibles, but playing in sanctioned play in Magic the Gathering has an upkeep fee of if you want to be able to play any deck, which is absurd, an upkeep fee of thousands of dollars a year. Like it's the standard decks, and if you want to even consider playing a sanctioned Eternal format with some of these where some of these reserve list cards are legal, you're looking at possibly five digits.
Sure, yes, that is very true. Like to be competitive starts expensive and gets more expensive.
But one truly special form of FOMO is the secret lair drops that they have created. It's another attempt at a new product to bring reprints into the hands of players. much like the master sets.
Just the most inefficient, most extractive way possible.
The Secret Lair supplemental product was first a series of limited time alternate art prints of specific loosely thematically related cards that were legal in sanctioned Magic the Gathering tournaments, upwards of 4 to 5, basically, at a time. And they would package and send all and ship all of that out, and that was it's a very wasteful, in my personal opinion. Many Secret Lairs were strictly reprints, although one Secret Lair started a major movement for the Secret Lair and for the game in general, the Secret Lair Walking Dead drop. Yes. All of the cards in the Walking Dead Secret Lair drop were in fact not reprints. They were exclusive and they were unique, as well as being licensed characters from other properties and legal in sanctioned play.
Well, and I want to say one other thing here also. I could be wrong about this. Mm. I suspect that no one on the Magic the Gathering development team was like, man, I'm just a huge fan of The Walking Dead. We got to do a crossover with those guys.
I don't know.
Like, the thing is, like, The Walking Dead, as pushed by AMC, they were pushing so aggressively for partnerships and brand deals with everything. There were so many, that was the thing that was pushed in this specific crossover way across so many types of games and products and stuff like that, that it felt like the door was opening. It felt like someone at AMC approached Hasbro and was like, hey, we want to do crossover stuff. What can you do with this?
I'm a little uncomfortable with that. That's very speculative.
Sure.
I don't necessarily agree with that. And I will defend designers of Magic the Gathering a lot of the times, but not for this one, because particularly Rick Steadfast Leader was a legendary creature that had an exceptional support for any decks with a lot of humans. And he ended up being particularly powerful in Eternal formats where humans decks already existed and only available for a limited time. And in spite of the community backlash, this was one of the highest selling products. And thus, Universes Beyond was born, a semi-diegetic means with which Wizards of the Coast can leverage the crossover market to their fans. They designed a really successful product and impactful product that pleased a lot of people with a lot of money. Universes Beyond would not be limited, however, to Secret Lair for a while. After a while, it too would diverge into the greater product pool, much like the Master Sets, after creating format warping individual cards, would then suddenly go into the greater product pool, releasing themed booster sets and pre-constructed decks for franchises like Dungeons & Dragons, which is a shoe-in. That one's fair. So there are cards for Karlach and Astarion and all the Baldur's Gate lovelies. Lord of the Rings.
That one makes sense also.
Yeah, I mentioned the One Ring. I think it's whatever. Street Fighter. That one's very pretty funny. This is my Chun-Li deck. And even science fiction franchises like Doctor Who and, yes, Fallout. So after there was a while, and I didn't pull up this blog quote from Mark Rosewater, but he was pretty against science fiction, which I actually disagree with. And I think the design team eventually convinced him to release a set. There was a set called Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. That's a very Neo Tokyo looking set that I think everyone loved.
Yeah, I did not play that set, but the impression I got was very positive.
Yeah, and it looks freaking sweet. So I'm not complaining about the fact that it's science fiction at all. However, Fallout, this is what we're here to talk about. Released on March 8th of this year, just in time, of course, for the Amazon Prime series. Perfect, why not? Fallout Universes Beyond is comprised of the following products. 4 different multiplayer pre-constructed decks, one of which is much more powerful than the others. I'm just going to say that's so far the consensus. Fallout Universes Beyond collector's boosters, those premium $20 to $30 boosters, Secret Lair times Fallout Vault Boy, Secret Lair and Fallout Points of Interest, and Secret Lair and Fallout SPECIAL. And the last 3 were half of a cross promotion of the Secret Lair Drop Series Equinox Super Drop 2024. Are you exhausted yet?
Yes, I'm so exhausted.
I think that the existence of the products alone is evidence enough that Wizards of the Coast are capable of designing a vast array of products, and many of which are for people who have more money than sense, and they are intentionally excluding those unwilling to spend several hundred dollars from having the most competitive
cards at this point.
Yeah, and I got two things I want to say here before we jump in.
Yeah.
The first is that with the incredible escalation of product releases annually, like they're putting out more than twice as many cards as they ever had before over the last few years.
Yeah.
I will say, people seem broadly happy with the overall quality of the sets coming out, but as someone who kind of still follows along and studies from a design perspective, I definitely perceive the design team like as being stretched kind of thin. Like there's a lot of stuff where it's like the innovative stuff is coming a little bit less and less often, and there's a lot more of sort of like, okay, how can we reconfigure the tools we already have? That feels like it's being driven a bit by a really aggressive release schedule.
It's a 30-year-old game, and it's brilliantly designed. Look at all this design space it's had. This thing's got legs, man.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Garfield is incredible, an absolutely absolutely masterful stroke of genius. This game was
incredible core rule system, and
it's just so funny how that one decision to sort of balance the game by including card rarity
created
a complete empire. That's just the snowball effect of money. And
because the other thing also is, according to all metrics, apparently the game is doing incredibly well right now. They are not oversaturating the market. Like, it seems like this stuff is selling, it's flying off shelves.
Good. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. I feel like the design teams have probably just been able to grow and reinvest. We were looking over the cards for Universes Beyond Fallout, and we couldn't really find that many design flops either. So it felt like for this product, the designers were well aware of not only their capabilities and the limits that they could do, but also the franchise that they were working with. And they made a lot of really great choices.
There are some good designs in here. I was reading through earlier today.
What we recommend to if you want to, loosely, before we even get into our guide of sorts, what I would recommend to, if you are interested in Magic the Gathering, after we're talking about some of the funny and interesting cards, Fallout Universes Beyond would be a really good way to start. Some of these cards we're going to talk about are goofy as fuck. And we are nothing if not goofballs. So why don't we get into what makes... it's kind of the more fun part of this. It's rife with the Universes Beyond Fallout is just this, again, really, really inspired kind of collaboration, I think. When I first heard it, I was a little bit like, it's just another one of these, right? But and setting aside the argument that whether or not these Fallout cards actually belong in Magic the Gathering at this point, It's they're here. We're just at the stage of having accepted that this is a crossover multi-universal product.
This is how it works.
And we just want to talk about some of the funny and interesting cards. So there's two types of cards that I really enjoy in this game. One of which is sort of, in general terms, the new cards that are not reprints. They are cleverly using existing Magic mechanics to tell one of the many kind of facets of of the story of the Fallout universe, or explain a particular detail, expressed it in a completely different medium. That's one category. And the other category is the clever reprint of an existing Magic card and changing the art and flavor to use Fallout. Fallout art, Fallout text, any sort of way to justify its inclusion that way. There's a lot of really, really good reprints in this set that are pretty awesome. Why don't we start with the ones that are completely new cards?
Sure.
Yep. Do you want to start? I've been talking a lot. Do you want to start us off with a card you like?
Yeah, sure. Actually, so my favorite card in the set is there is a legendary creature, which is like a special kind of creature,
yep,
called the Master Transcendent, based on the boss of, I believe, Fallout 1. Which is not a game that I've played, but I've kind of like, there's like a Let's Play podcast series that I listen to. So I know the basics of it. The Master Transcendent, I think this is an ingenious piece of design. The way that this works is in the game, the Master is the one running a sentient computer that is running the project to convert human beings into super mutants with the goal of replacing the population on the surface with a new super mutant civilization. How that manifests in the game is, for this set, they have a new mechanic that basically simulates like rads. So if you collect rads, then you on a regular basis have to discard cards from the top of your deck and lose life points. And the way that the master card works is he can take cards that have been specifically discarded from the top of your deck and bring them back from your graveyard into play as mutant creatures. And so it's actually this really neat synergy of directly interacting with the radiation mechanics and taking creatures that have been irradiated and bringing them back as mutants. And I think that like the way that the whole thing kind of clicks together is actually really nifty.
That looks sick. That looks like a really fun way card to build a deck around. I want to also supply a legendary creature from this selection. I am going to supply Liberty Prime Recharged. This is from Fallout 3, the ultra democratic automaton in the style of Starship Troopers or Helldivers 2. He is a legendary artifact robot. An artifact, basically, I want to talk about artifact as a type. Artifact is basically a catch-all for thing, like object laying around, or robot
mechanism
or just
sword,
yeah, things like that. And so that's a nice bit of flavor. He has text on him that allows him to attack really fast, but you have to spend a resource called energy that is kind of its own thing. You have to spend something, basically, and it's not easy to get energy, and if you don't use that energy, you have to get rid of it, basically. And he has some really fun flavor text, of course, of one of his quotes. Magic cards come with cute little text in italics that is not rules text. Call it flavor text. He says democracy is non-negotiable, which is great. Yeah, Liberty Prime is fucking hilarious. It's one of the best parts of Fallout 3, and I would endeavor to build a Liberty Prime Recharge deck.
That could be pretty fun.
Particularly because I also like energy, and I think it's a pretty underserved mechanic
There might be a reason for that.
Yeah.
There's a reason maybe they haven't touched energy after it first came out too much.
Yeah, it was hard to interact with. But what about your next card here?
My next card is Inventory Management.
Yes.
This is an instant spell. You can cast it. And this actually, it involves a little used mechanic called Split Second. Split Second's kind of obscure. I'm always a fan when
it
comes
up. We do want to talk about Split Second, yeah.
Yeah. Split Second is a mechanic that comes up on a couple dozen cards. That means that when the card is played, no one else can do anything. Magic is normally a very interactive game.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like playing, counterplay. You can react to things. You can respond to things. I play this card, I activate this ability, etc. Split Second means that no one can do anything until you finish playing your card. And Inventory Management allows you to reshuffle all of the like beneficial enchantments and the various equipments that you've given your creatures among each other, which is hilarious. It's like you pause the game and swap out your pistol for a grenade launcher and your jumpsuit for a set of armor, and then resume the game and the person in front of you is caught completely off guard.
That is a really funny one. And speaking of enchantments, one I want to talk about. So an enchantment is basically a card that has a static effect on the board. And one of the ways they use, there's two major ways they use enchantments in this, and we're going to talk about both, I'm pretty sure. The first is to represent the Fallout perks. And one of which I mentioned on New Vegas is the New Vegas episode is a particular favorite, again, called Strong Back. This is something you can put on your creature to make other enchantments cost less, as well as equipment and stuff. So it would be really good with that Split Second if you just were able to quickly change everything around for a lot less. And then, of course, the thing that you put the creature or the monster, whatever, the robot, the Liberty Prime Recharged, that if it's in the same deck somehow, that you have all those enchantments on with Strong Back gets bigger and bigger for each one. So it's a great way to sort of build a battle cruiser kind of deal. I think that really captures Strong Back, the essence, very well. How about your next one here?
I picked Mr. House, President and CEO. This is Mr. House from New Vegas.
Yes.
I think this card is great. It's looking for you to roll dice. Sometimes the cards in the game involve you rolling dice. This one is watching for you rolling dice, and every time you roll a 4 or higher, you get to make a combat robot, and every time you roll a 6 or higher, you get to make a combat robot and also a treasure token that you can spend later. But then his second ability lets you cash in those treasure tokens to roll even even more dice, which potentially lets you make even more robots, which potentially lets you make even more treasure tokens.
Yeah.
And I think this is great, one, from the sense of like Mr. House building up his handybot army that patrols New Vegas, and two, completely tying into the entire casino theme.
And rolling dice is fun. Rolling dice is just fun. It's what we do. It's what we come to Wizards of the Coast for. Really fun new ways to roll dice. In a different direction, I have another legendary creature. This one isn't. It's a small. It's kind of a small fry, but it's so fucking funny. Like this is what got me into Fallout in the first place. This meme. This is a card representing Butch Deloria Tunnel Snake. This is another legendary creature. He's from Fallout 3 again. A lot of really good picks from Fallout 3. He basically has his own special keyword in a sense where, and it's called the Tunnel Snake's Rule. whenever Butch Deloria Tunnel Snake attacks an opponent, he gets stronger for each other rogue card or snake card you control.
Oh, I didn't catch the snake bit. Oh, yeah. That's really good.
So he gets bigger the larger his gang is, and you can also spend resources to turn other cards on your battlefield into rogues in addition to their other types. But yeah,
you can't make them snakes.
No, just rogues. You can't make them snakes. That would be, I think there are other snakes in that deck. I'm pretty sure. That's so funny. Also, the Tunnel Snakes Rule video. Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh god, the classic. If you haven't seen, if you're a youngin, you're not familiar with Tunnel Snakes Rule, the music video. That's us, and we rule. All right.
Next card. Yes Man, Personal Securitron, also New Vegas, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Yes Man.
Yes Man. Yes Man.
Yes Man.
I don't want to spoil it, but yes, essential.
I mean, the combat mechanic kind of spoils it a little bit. That's part of why it's so great, right?
I guess.
Like, the way that Yes Man works is he has an ability that, like, that encourages you to pass him around so you can give him to an opponent in exchange for drawing some cards and benefiting for some stuff. But every time you pass him around, he's got a little counter that ticks up. And when he eventually dies, the more counters that are on him, the more the more like soldier tokens get created by the person that originally played him. And yeah. So like you play Hot Potato with him as like he like changes loyalties constantly, and then a whole army pours out.
Yeah, so it is interesting. I don't know. I think that's not that much of a spoiler for what Yes Man does in New Vegas compared to some other cards in this set that are pretty major, but
sure.
Fallout 4 came out 8 years ago, so when I was reviewing this and I was like, oh, okay.
I guess Yes Man's loyalties being ambiguous are represented on the card.
Yes Man is a character that is programmed to not have loyalty. Yes Man is a character that and this is where like I ended my Fallout New Vegas playthrough. I was like, as soon as I got to Yes Man, I was like, oh yeah, I remember the entire crux of this guy. Yeah, super important thing. It's just a robot that will say yes to anything that anyone puts into it, including a particularly powerful artifact that does not exist in universes beyond Fallout, and I want to talk about that later. But before, I want to talk about another powerful artifact that I thought was a flavor win, particularly because it's delicious. It's the Nuka-Cola vending machine. This is an artifact where that creates tokens that are food. There's something called a food token where you can basically spend that token to gain some life, and it has a static effect on it. Whenever you sacrifice or use a food, you get a treasure token, which is a bottle cap. So you pay some money to the vending machine to get your food, and then after the vending machine, you can spend your bottle cap. It's awesome. It's just, I love it. I love it so much because that is exactly what makes me excited about Nuka-Cola stuff. I mean, it just feels good to crack a Nuka-Cola and get the thing. It's a shame, and I will say this now, kind of outside of a different section, that none of the tokens are the Star Sarsaparilla tokens from New Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
That would maybe like make people goad you into it. That's what I would do. If you had a Sarsaparilla token that made people attack you, that would be really funny because that's what happened. But it's not.
I will say, like, for as much as like New Vegas is sometimes like the black sheep of the franchise,
No, it's not.
Oh, I don't know that Bethesda thinks very highly of that game.
Who cares about Bethesda thinks? There's so many New Vegas cards in
this.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm saying this set has a lot of New Vegas love in it.
Yeah, because Bethesda, it's not. It's still canon and it's important. No, I don't think it's at all. I disagree that it's a black sheep of the franchise. I think it's a golden child.
It's a golden child for fans.
and everyone. I don't know about that.
Okay.
The other, that's my last kind of new card. Did you have any other new cards that weren't? Oh, yeah, you did. You have one more.
Just the one. So I did a series of vault cards that represent kind of like the process of living in a vault. Like these have effects that play out over time. Most of them are okay. The Vault 112 sadistic simulation I liked quite a bit as a weird representation of the VR vault from, I think, Fallout 3. That just, like creatures get stunned, but then generate energy from being stunned, like they're being plugged into the machine. And then you can spend the energy and in order to kind of like break out a whole bunch of new cards from your deck and play them. Yeah. And it just is a cool reflection of that weird vault where everyone was stuck in the VR world.
Yeah, the vault particularly is the other. I mentioned there were two ways in which this product uses enchantments. One is the perks and the other is the vaults. They are enchantments that stay on the battlefield for a little while, kind of tell a story with their mechanics and then go away. And I think what we should do is use that to kind of transition into, I'm going to scrap that. I mentioned prior that there were two ways in which enchantments are primarily represented in this set. One of them is the perks and the other is the vaults. This is a different kind of enchantment that that tells a story and then goes away. So I thought it's good to include. There were a couple other vaults I wanted to include, but I really wanted to pare my list down because we have a lot to get through. We still have to talk about the other types of reprints, cards that we like that are clever reprints. Why don't we keep these to like two or three for each, because there's a lot of really good ones
yep,
here.
Yep.
I will start with my first one. Since I just talked about Nuka-Cola Vending Machine, I also want to talk about Thirst for Knowledge. Genius. It's an image of a super mutant here drinking a can of Quantum Nuke. Nuka-Cola, and basically what this does is this, Thirst for Knowledge is a card that lets you, and knowledge in Magic the Gathering is represented by drawing cards. Having more cards in your hand means you are smarter. So Thirst for Knowledge lets you draw three cards and then get rid of two of them unless you discard an artifact card. Perhaps maybe a Nuka-Cola bottle gets discarded. I thought that was such a clever inclusion. How about you? What's a good reprint for you?
Crucible of Worlds is classic card that lets you play land cards back from the graveyard. It represented here as the Gek kit, the Garden of Eden creation kit, which I think is just like a nice little lineup of like, yeah, that's what it does. You know, it brings lands back from the dead.
Yeah, and specifically, though, we'll point out that the Crucible of Worlds is a really expensive card and was only included in the collector's boosters in this art. You gotta get lucky. You gotta gamble to get that one, or just pay the price up front. If you want that version of Crucible Worlds, be willing to spend for it, because I don't recommend gambling with your card games. Okay. Speaking of clever little representations of artifacts, Wayfarer's Bauble is basically a card. It's a tiny little artifact that you can spend some of your resources to go look for a land. It's not quite as good as Crucible Worlds, but it is represented with the art depicting the New Vegas snow globes. I think that's so clever. What better way to spend some fun quality time than collecting some snow globes? I love the snow globes mechanic. I like them probably the most of the collectathons. I don't know why. I mean, it's just like you get a snow globe, you turn it into Mr. House, and you get 2,000 caps for it. It's outrageous, but it's so satisfying every time. So I thought that was a really clever inclusion. I see you got one more reprint that you really like.
I got, yeah, and then when I don't like, I want to talk about.
Yeah, we'll talk. Well, yeah, we'll get, okay. We'll move into that.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So the other one I like is Sticky Fingers. This is an enchantment you can put on a creature. It doesn't matter. It gives you treasure and lets you draw cards. But the art is of a scavenger who is loading up their pack with increasing amounts of loot and random garbage. And I think that the confluence there of that card and how it works with the fact that everyone who plays a Fallout game just ends up hauling around a small surplus store's worth of random trash very funny.
Yeah, 100%. If only they had a strong back. So those will cover, I think. I have a couple of other, there's like so many cards. It was hard to pare down the ones I really wanted to talk about, but anything that was dealing with kind of the trinkets and little baubles of the machines of Fallout really stuck with me, but so did Strongback. There are cards, though, there are some cards that we're kind of confused about that we want to talk about. My first pick of a card that kind of misses the mark is the card that represents my beloved Arcade Ganon from New Vegas. This is the gay man companion. He's a doctor. And he has he of course has the ability to draw and discard cards, which is, great. He's a smart guy, right? Okay, sure. That's simple enough. And then he gets an increasing amount of counters for every time you do that, and then once per turn you get to of the items you either discarded or that are in your discard pile, you can cast artifacts or human spells from your graveyard. And this is in reference to his quest for Auld Lang Syne somehow.
Yeah,
like, do you remember that quest? He's a son of an Enclave soldier, which is like kind of, they see themselves as sort of a continuation of the USA, and they are kind of this hyper specialized military faction. And he, for Auld Lang Syne, he goes around New Vegas looking for certain people to kind of give him keywords, and then eventually gets the Enclave back together with the whole conflict. And then once you finish that quest, the Enclave resolves to join you in your whichever side you decide to side with for the Battle of Hoover Dam. I said side a lot, but I think that's how that sentence is supposed to go. So at the end of Auld Lang Syne, he leaves your party, and then he goes and gets into his family power armor, and he fights in the Battle of Hoover Dam with that power armor instead. What about that? He's casting it from your graveyard. These people aren't dead or discard pile. It's not. I don't know. It doesn't work for me.
A lot of the human characters, notice that both of the ones that I pulled out were like robots or like artificial intelligences. When I was reading through this, a lot of the human characters kind of felt like that, where I was like, I don't know how these abilities really match up to your plot in the game.
No, I've got a couple artifacts in my kind of miss the mark section. There were some good cards for humans, like Piper, I thought was really cute. And Curie's not human, I guess. Right. Haven't met her in Fallout 4 yet, but I know. That's kind of my first one, was like, I would have expected him to like tutor something or like exile, like leave the battlefield and come back with a bunch of people or something, come with a bunch of tokens eventually, but like... Yeah, that one's kind of a miss for me. How about you? What's your first miss?
So it's actually a reprint called... So here's the thing. I get why they had to include this reprint because of the name alone.
Yeah.
It is a card called Open the Vaults.
Yeah.
You can't do a Fallout set and not include Open the Vaults.
So here's... I see your point, but I think I disagree. And I think this ties back to what I said about the enchantments in this set. The enchantments themselves are the vaults. And if you have a bunch of your vaults in the graveyard and you're casting Open the vaults come out of your graveyard and they're open again. Mm. And I think specifically in this context, it works. But it is a bit of a road to get there. So I see where you're coming from. And yeah, all the artifacts are outside of the vaults.
Yeah, like for me, it was like...
Not all of them. So there's some good shit inside the vaults.
For me, it was like, what Open the Vaults does is it brings all your artifacts and enchantments back to the playing field. And I was like, okay, but like in the Fallout universe... opening like all the like the artifacts are like out in the world, like you don't open the vaults to get the artifacts inside them.
Yeah,
you leave the vaults to go get the artifacts that are outside them. I don't know, just like it
I think specifically because the vaults are enchantments.
Yeah, that you know what, that makes sense. I didn't actually make that connection.
Yeah, but that's just for me. Let us know what you think. And I want to talk about, speaking of artifacts, I want to talk about this bullshit piece of shit artifact that shouldn't exist. It's the Pip-Boy 3000. This is garbage.
Yeah,
because this card can go in any deck. In Magic the Gathering, there are color restrictions. There are restrictions to deck building, and Pip-Boy gets around all of them. And basically, in any deck you want, it's an artifact you can equip to a creature, and it can do all sorts of stuff. It can draw and discard cards. It can get bigger, or it can... And we haven't talked about lands, but it can do something called untapping up to two target lands, which is basically just doubling your money very early on. It is ridiculous. And it shouldn't exist. This is a big, I think, does it do what a Pip-Boy does? Kind of. I wouldn't have said untap two lands for a map. I would have just been like, maybe even one. I don't know.
Yeah, like,
or just like
the balance in this thing is weird.
Maybe just like fast travel or something to give something haste. I don't know. Whatever. You know, weird. I guess that doesn't work if you're attacking, but like, it's not my job to not design things that go in literally every deck that are just egregiously Swiss Army. Too many things that are too good on too many creatures in too many decks. How about your next flavor fail?
It's not even a flavor fail. I just find this so funny. The reprint of a card called Anguished Unmaking, which is a fairly cheap, just like straightforward way to like remove an opponent's card from the game. It's relatively like, you know, unsexy. It's just like a utility card, except that they have themed it around the moment when your dad sacrifices himself in Fallout 3 to keep the Project Purity thing out of the hands of the Enclave. And just as someone who finds that plot point so stupid, I don't know, just like the idea of like, yeah, and we're going to put the climactic moment where your dad dies from Fallout 3, a moment that I don't know how many people have an emotional connection to, but we're going to put it in here. But we're not going to put it in like a big card. It's just going to kind of go on one of like the basic utility cards. I don't know. All those factors kind of intersecting just makes me laugh when I look at this.
Yeah, and just the way that he's kind of looking out at the player behind pane of glass, like, no. It's unironically pretty funny. I think I agree with your take on this. I would not go for this printing of Anguished Unmaking. I think there are much better ones. But if you need that card, then I guess buy that deck. I want to talk about... I want to kind of move on because we're at
yeah,
a pretty
yep,
good
we're
amount
good.
Of time. But that is sort of our... Well, we have one more kind of category of things that we want to talk about, and that is our notable exclusions. Cards we would have liked to see that didn't. Is there anything you can think of? I got a couple.
You go for your... I actually don't have any because I don't have a lot of the Fallout stuff in my brain like that. But
one,
you...
Platinum Chip.
Oh, yeah, duh.
What the fuck?
Yeah, okay, yeah, lay
up. Chip, the central MacGuffin of New Vegas. Not a thing. Not, there's a certain character that we've talked about that is heavily related to the Platinum Chip, but that's not what the Platinum Chip does. We want the Platinum Chip. It's the ultimate USB stick. Number two, Fisto. I understand why Fisto's not in this, but I want him. Fisto is a sex robot who fists in New Vegas. He's fantastic. Number three, Ant Agonizer. The Ant Agonizer is a super villain, quote unquote.
Oh, right, this guy.
Yeah. No, she's a lady.
Oh, this lady. Yeah,
and
yeah.
She fights the machinist or the mechanist. Yeah, and she would have been a perfect inclusion in the mutant deck. Somebody who cares about the moth shit. I think that shit's so fun. The Ant Agonizer. It was high camp. Could have been a high camp legendary creature. They excluded that, and instead they included. I mean, they had to include a Pip-Boy card. It just shouldn't have been what it was. Whatever. But yeah, I think the Platinum Chip is the most egregious exclusion. that's fun. So yeah, if you don't have anything you want to talk about, I guess we will move on to... We'll take a quick break. We'll talk about our sponsor, of course, as we always do. And then we'll move on to a guide of sorts to get into Magic the Gathering.
We're gonna read some
Alex, there's so many meal delivery services to choose from these days. How do you choose what meal service delivery you want?
Well, if you're like me, you probably try and then cancel at least four of them, but you keep looking for another one.
I've canceled so many because things like the food isn't very good, has a weird texture, the deliveries were inconvenient.
They were very expensive.
Or maybe I was too lazy to actually make the damn thing. Right?
Right. Those are all problems that I've run into previously.
Well... That is good. That's good news for both of us then, because there is a new meal delivery service that solves that exact issue. Now, introducing Integral Meals.
Integral Meals? Well, that sounds comprehensive.
Integral Meals is a meal delivery service that you can open up and eat right out of the box.
Right out of the box? But don't I need to do any kind of food prep?
No, the food prep is done for you, as all your meals are shoved into a blender, an industrial grade blender, and shipped to you in a solid frozen slop.
Oh, so it's like smoothies. Like, I'm sure you get like fruit and avocado and stuff.
Yeah, it's like that Soylent thing.
Yeah, or like what are some of the meal options I could get in my integral meals?
Well, you could get chicken, green beans, and mandarin oranges, all sautéed over charcoal fire.
And then blended.
Put into a cube.
Oh, so... Okay, so it all comes in the blended together.
Yes, it all comes blended together. You don't have to worry about which part of the meal you're going to eat first, right? It's all sorts of decision paralysis around there. Do you eat the veggies first? Do you go with the meat?
And then
the fruit.
It arrives frozen?
It arrives frozen. Well, it's certainly not going to arrive liquid.
Well, and then, so I thaw it, and then I drink it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it flash frozen or
it is freeze dried? Sorry,
it's freeze dried.
Yeah,
that
and vacuum sealed in cardboard,
like the astronauts.
Yeah, like
okay.
The astronauts.
Oh, I'm back in. This is like space shit.
It's spacey and spacious because it doesn't take up that much space to send you all sorts of pre-prepared meals.
Wow, I'm looking at these now. It says that one of these is my food for 3 days.
Yeah, there's a good option here for Cobb salad, where it's just the lettuce and the bacon bits and the hard-boiled eggs and the lamb and the pitcher plants all blended together.
I mean, lettuce is basically frozen water anyway. It's close enough.
It is close enough. And you can get your prepackaged, pre-blended, pre-prepared meals frozen and shipped directly to you at Derivative. Nope, that's not it. Integral Meals. Different math joke.
That's integralmeals.biz?
It is 1NTEGR4L. Actually, no, sorry, that's also a 1. meals.biz. Yes. /join. And if you put in the promo code Friendwalkers, what the fuck?
What
the fuck? Did you submit?
No, I did. I put our podcast down.
God,
I put,
damn it.
I put
did they mistake
buds.
Us for Friendwalkers again?
I mean, they must have looked us up. Like, look, we're right next to them in the yellow pages.
That makes sense. Okay. Well, you can go to that 1NTEGR41 meals.biz/join and put in Friendwalkers for exclamation point. Is that the integral?
No.
What's the integral symbol? That's factorial. No, not factor. Not factor.
The integral symbol is a tall S.
Tall S percent off your first tall S meals.
The discounts are asymptotic. The more you order, the higher they get, but no higher than 15% off.
Oh, that's a great deal. I can't wait to get started on Integral Meals today.
Great.
Okay, we are back, and that was a wonderfully thought out and planned and organized advertisement session that we just had. That's what they're called, advertisement sessions. And we're going to move on to our B segment session, a guide of sorts. We're going to change things up. Last time, of course, the guide of sorts was a little bit more freeform. It was imaginative, but it was helpful.
It was helpful. Oh, yeah. We've had, like, what, three people write us and say that they learned how to play bmng.drive from listening to that?
Yeah, that was awesome. So check that out. This time, though, we've got some guideposts in place for our guide of sorts. And listen, Magic the Gathering has so much art in it. It's overwhelming. We don't want to include art in this one. So
no.
We're going to have Alex mostly helping out with some of the writing here. But first, so we're going to talk about how to really play Magic the Gathering, okay? We're not going to talk about the rules. We're not going to talk about tapping your lands, using mana to cast spells. We're going to talk about the emotions. We're going to talk about the things you have to do.
The headspace you got
to
get in.
Yes. Things you have to do to really tackle this monumentous, esoteric product. Step number one, watch a fucking YouTube video.
Yeah, just go find someone else. There's so many of these.
Look. Watch a god. Don't go to the site because they're going to try and sell you products.
Yeah, like even Arena, like Arena used to be okay about this, but even they've gotten really aggressive.
I mean, granted, you are going to be buying things when you buy into Magic the Gathering. It's an expensive hobby, but watch YouTube video sorts. And side note, have something else to do while that YouTube video is going.
Maybe like crochet.
Maybe crochet. Maybe a little Balatro. You know, maybe some other kind of thing that you're doing, or maybe you just listen to it at work because that video is going to be hours long, or it's going to be a series of playlisted videos that are 10 minutes each for 20 videos.
I wouldn't play it at like 1.5x speed. You could probably play it like 1.25x.
Yeah. And expect this process step to take, I don't know, a week.
And that'll cover like the basics for you. That'll get you over like, hey, here's what a creature is, and here's how you use it to deal damage.
And once you get all that, we're going to step into step two here. Learn how to play one of two formats, Commander or Draft.
Yes.
Pick one of those.
The two formats you should play.
Pick one of those.
Okay, actually, no. Bits aside, this is good advice.
Please, no.
Don't jump into Standard or Modern out of the gate.
Oh, God.
Actually,
or Pioneer, or Historic, or Legacy, or God forbid, Vintage.
Actual no jokes advice here. If you want to play Magic, start with Commander or Limited.
yes, because those are the formats that suck the least.
And they tend to involve the least upfront money.
Yes.
Draft is a format where you show up at an event and you pay like $15 or $20 and you open packs there and build a deck with them. And because of that, it's relatively low cost to do on a regular basis. Commander is a much more casual format. There are a lot of pre-con decks you can buy for $30-$40 that in most playgroups are going to at least let you sit at the table
actually,
and involve.
I will actually say not even draft so much as sealed.
Sealed is
a much better
way
to do it because then you're not dealing with the politics of drafting and like getting overwhelmed at what you should take. Sealed is a format where you are given a bunch of cards in booster packs. You open them and you build a deck and that's it. So you take what you learn about deck building in those videos and then you apply them to Sealed. And a great way to get into Sealed is to look for new sets, pre-release events at your local game stores.
And you open your card packs and you're like, well, there's not a lot in here, but I can kind of make like green, red, black work if I splash white. And then you play against someone who pulled like two Baneslayer Angels and you just lose three games in a row and you're like, okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. Listen, if you're not willing to lose to bullshit, then you're not willing to play Magic the Gathering. That will take us into a next step, step three. Once you have gone to events for Sealed or whatever, find people who play and have them lend you a deck to play with their group if you're doing Commander specifically. Obviously, that's not going to work for Sealed. But for Commander, this kind of maybe it's a 2A. Because Commander decks can be expensive and people are often bringing multiple decks to these events. They have their loadouts and they are more than willing to lend you some of their less expensive decks to give you kind of to get more people into the playgroup.
The key slang term you want to know here is pilot. You want to ask if you can
Say pilot, yes, that's good. I didn't think of that. That sounds like you're in the know. And
exactly.
You're treating their deck like a well-oiled machine.
That's good.
That butter them up with your diction. You can search for local gaming discords or game shop sites for Commander nights or draft nights, local game shop nights. All right, step three, ?2B. I've lost count of the track because it kind of was like, this doesn't fit in, but whatever. Step three, we'll just go with it. Brave your crippling social anxiety and actually fucking go.
You just gotta do it. You just gotta show up. Look, and like,
it sucks. It's hard.
Here's the thing. You'll probably know within one visit if the vibes at a scene are good or bad. And if the vibes at that scene are bad, you don't go back because they're not going to get better. But if the vibes at that scene are good, they're probably pretty good and you should go back.
Mm-hmm. You should go back. You should absolutely go back. And step 3B, never engage the trade fiends.
No, not
at
all.
Do not. They are going to win. Do not trade things with people there.
These people are like the margin traders of the Magic the Gathering world. They know everything.
Just wait.
They're going to offer you trades that look good, but are eking them out like a 35-cent advantage, and they just build all those up until they've made like thousands of dollars.
And don't give in. Don't give in. If you do what I did, okay, 3B, 1, do what I did. If you're going for Sealed and Draft, turn your store credit in. If stores these days still have reserve list cards, get them with store credit. That's what I did. That's how I got my original duels, and I still have them, and they are.
How much store credit did you build up?
It wasn't that much back then. It was like 2014.
So yeah, I don't know how much it supplies anymore.
Yeah, I got a Badlands for like $80.
Okay, that's not
and
bad.
They're like $600 now or something stupid. And yeah, so it wasn't that bad. I mean, I also got, you know, I think a Wheel of Fortune, which is now $250, $300, something like that, for $40.
I'm gonna be very clear here. The cards Jerome is talking about are not gonna be relevant to you unless you play a couple of relatively marginal formats. You are not gonna need them for any kind of regular participation.
No, you're not gonna need them. We talked about, well, whatever. Yes. You're not gonna need them, but like if there's a store that's still doing this, do your best to get the store credit to try and get those reserve list cards, but I feel like everyone's in the know.
They do hold value. Like, I hate to think of these cards as financial instruments, but, you know, a reserve list card is probably going to be worth more in 10 years than you pay for it now.
Yeah, it's true. Even in-store credit, where you're selling your cards back at a loss. But do it! If you can, do it! It's just try and get one. Because it's kind of cool to have them, even though I would love the reserve list to be abolished, I'm like, it's cool that I have some of these reserve list cards. I've got three duels, five or six. I can't remember how many reserve list cards I have. Mm. But none of the Power Nine that are like obviously $6,000 at their lowest printing. Anyway.
I was going to say, there's more reserve list cards than I have, but I've got one.
You have one?
Yeah, because I have from the Vault Relics.
Oh, shit. That's right. Good pickup. We talked about that.
We did.
Good one. Yeah, no, Mock Simon is also one of the ones I have, but I have the original printing of it, but which is not as cool. I'm going to be honest. I like that one better. Anyway, the final step here, once you're done braving your crippling your social anxiety and going, which maybe I should have put before finding people to play and have them lend you a deck, listen, we're working things through. Whatever.
It's a holistic guide.
Come to a decision if you want to branch out and make your own decks for Commander, Standard, or whatever other formats you do.
And this is an important thing here.
Yes.
If you want to build your own deck, you do not buy random packs and open them looking for cards.
I was just about to say, buy singles, look for decks that are online and copy them. Ignore anyone calling you a net decker, which is not a thing anymore. But back then, people would be like, you copy online, you whatever. I was like, yeah, because I want to win the free packs. Because there's money on the line.
And if you get into it, then you can start maybe tweaking stuff and start being like, what if I run a couple of these instead of a couple of those? What does that do? And you can pilot it out. But like at that point, like you're really in it. At that point, you are all the way in on this game on like a meta level. And if you're there, congratulations. You're going to have a lot of fun.
And your wallet is going to be a lot lighter. You might not have fun. You might make a wrong choice and invest in a modern deck that gets banned. Like
yeah.
I did.
Wait, which one was that again?
Splinter Twin! Oh.
I forgot you had
the red blue cards, I still use a lot of them, but like, yeah, I had Splinter. I loved it. It was fun.
Mm-hmm. And then they just were like, this is too powerful.
This is too powerful.
I mean,
but then they printed out a bunch of zero mana counter spells that would be really great in Splinter Twin decks, admittedly. Yeah, actually, never mind. Now that I think about it, it probably should stay banned. But damn it.
Yeah, on the one hand, I'm sympathetic to the fact that, like, Splinter Twin had to go.
It was in a master set!
But on the other hand, this keeps happening. Like, I don't know how bad it's been over the last couple of years, but man, there was that period of, like, 5 or 6 years there where every single year was, like, one big fuck-up of, like, I guess...
Not even one. Several.
Several big fuck-ups. I was still kind of playing when Oko was around. Fuck that guy.
Oko, but then it was like Oko into we will continue this that's basically was our guide of sorts into getting sucked into Magic the Gathering, a loose set of things. Once you brave your crippling social anxiety and go and play, it's really fun. We have a pretty good selection of card stores here in Chicago, but like even if you're out in the sticks, like the card stores there are actually usually better. Mm-hmm. They're kind of better. So if you let us know if you end up getting into Magic the Gathering, because we will be revisiting Magic the Gathering some point in the future when Magic the Gathering and Wizards of the Coast releases Universes Beyond Final Fantasy.
Oh, yeah.
That is coming.
That is coming.
And that is the entire sort of hook of this episode.
Fuck.
We wanted to establish the baseline for, hey, this is coming. We know we're going to have to talk about it. We're going to be playing Fallout. We might as well.
Fuck. I am actually interested in that.
I am too.
God. I might need to buy a few.
Don't buy the packs. Buy the singles. It'll save you. It'll save you hundreds.
What if we did a friend draft?
Can you draft Universes Beyond?
Actually,
you can only buy the collector's boosters.
Oh, I guess so.
But they may have preconditioned the precon commanders.
We'll figure something out.
fuck, we may have to before that spoiler season starts, we may have to talk about like, what do we want to see as pre-con commanders? Like, do we want Cloud? Do we want Sephiroth? Do we want...
Is Cloud a commander? Really? Like,
he's definitely a legendary creature.
Yeah, but like, I'm trying to... Like,
I think he's got a lot of colors in him because he's fucked up.
He's fucked up. He's got a lot of emotional depth, right? And it's reflected in...
He's got a lot of mutated problem. He is a scientific... He is fucked up. He is a mutant freak. He is really fucked up. No, I think he would be a really good commander.
Okay, but here's my pitch for commander.
Okay.
Gaius von Belsar.
Of course. Absolutely. Very complicated.
Commander. Man, see, here's
the
problem.
Okay, we can't. We're
here's
done.
The problem.
We're 70. We gotta stop.
Here's the problem. They're like 35 Final Fantasy games. I have no idea how they're gonna do this.
I don't either. Clive's coming. Clive. Fuck. We didn't talk about our side quests. Do you want to do that quick before we go?
I don't really have any this week.
I did the Final Fantasy 14 and 16 crossover event.
How was that?
It was Clivey. Okay. I did it on stream and I voiced the whole thing. It was fine. It's fun to voice the thing, but it's hard to do precision dodges and have them feel precise when your game is Final Fantasy 14.
Yeah.
But it was neat and the music's great. And Clive was Clive. I'm Clive.
Did it make you feel any more fondly towards that game?
No. I don't hate it though. It was fine. It's fine. It's Clive.
It's fine.
Clive time.
It's fine.
Clive is fine. And Clive is here to stay. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Stormbuds. I've been Clive. Clive Rossfield.
I'm kind of annoyed at how much fun I had talking about Magic the Gathering.
I know, right? We can't. Well, I'm glad you had fun. And of course, if you want to talk to us about Magic the Gathering or anything, you can join our Discord. Links to our socials are in the description of the episode. Next week, we are talking about Amazon Video, Prime Video's Fallout. We thought it was going to be one or two episodes. The whole season dropped. We're still going to talk about one or two episodes.
Which we're going to watch with a couple of our friends who know nothing about Fallout, so that should be fun.
Yeah, we're going to get a whole bunch of different perspectives and talk all about it. And until next week, born from Buds, Storm of Buds, we've been the Storm Buds, baby.
Good evening.
Good night.